So I'm going to start. My name is Linda Powell Jensen, and my story is about my criminal activity as a child in Holden Village. I was sleeping out with Rayma Paulson and her brother Jerry, and I don't know who his friend was. It was Jerry's idea, I'm sure, to go garden raiding. And I was a very timid child. People who know me now don't understand that. But we went down garden raiding, and we went down to Patsy LaFrenz's garden, and LaFrenz is the house that was previously owned by the Smalls, and you saw the nice garden they had there. So we raided the garden that night and enjoyed our carrots and all the good stuff. And about 2 days later, or the day after, I guess, Patsy LaFrenz was looking at all the footprints, and my mother that evening said there was discussion about the garden raiding at Patsy's house. And Patsy said it was kind of small feet, it wasn't adults. And Anna said, Rogers, well, she had looked out the window, she heard noise that night, and she saw Jerry Paulson out there, and Mom said, oh, that couldn't be, because Linda was sleeping out with Rayma at the Paulson house. So then she comes home and says, did you do that? Well, of course I did it. I told the truth. And Jerry and Rayma, I'm sure, never got caught, but my punishment was that I had to go down and tell Patsy LaFrenz that I did it. And I was their babysitter, their full-time babysitter, the only one that ever babysat for them, and I had to go tell them that I raided the garden. It took me a whole afternoon. There was our house, the Rogers house, and then LaFrenz. So I would start down the alley, and each trip I'd go two more steps and then back home. And it took me the whole afternoon to get down there, but I did have to confess to Patsy that I had raided her garden, which is probably the worst punishment any parent could have given a child. And like I said, I got caught. I've never raided a garden again after that. I'm sure that Jerry and Rayma didn't. So that's my story. And we'll move on to whichever order you two guys are going in. Okay.
Duncan gets to go first.
Give your name, Duncan, please.
Well, I'm Duncan Clark. I'm the oldest of five sons of Vinton and Fair Clark. My folks were here from 1937 to 1946. Dad was, among other things, chief engineer before he left to go to headquarters, the House Hunt Company in New York. Two stories about falling. One an actual fall, one a potential fall. My very first memory in life, and I was probably 4 years old. I was here from 1941 to 1946, so I was very young. As you all know, the snow in Holden is legendary. I was out on the porch of house number 11, and I believe the Haddons and the Douglases received us in house number 11. The snow was up to the top. It must have been at least 8 feet. And I was out there with my little brother, Don, who was probably 3. And I either jumped or fell, probably jumped, into the snow. And was quickly losing consciousness because the snow got into my mouth and into my nose and I couldn't breathe. My mother was in the bathtub at the time. And if you know about how those houses are set up, the bathtub really isn't very far from the porch. And my mother was athletic. She was a PE teacher, among other things. So she could make that in about 2 leaps. My little brother Don went into the bathroom and probably used 2 words, Duncan and snow. That was all he had to say. My mother leaped in and pulled me out at the very last moment. Otherwise, I would not be talking to you right now. A second story, that was an actual fall. A second story is one I've heard many times and is in my father's memoir. He wrote about 250 pages of his life, much of it here at Holden. Little Bob Douglas and I, apparently little Bob was about my age, and there was a snowfall or a snowshoot somewhere in this area. Of course, I wouldn't remember where. Apparently in the wintertime, the snow roars down periodically, and this was in the springtime. The snow was beginning to melt. There was a waterfall coming off a cliff that fell through the snow and then down toward Railroad Creek. It was off in the distance. And we decided, the two of us, 4-year-olds, maybe 5-year-olds, decided to explore where the water went when it went through the snow and then down into the creek. And so we were well out on this ledge of ice and snow. My mother, who for good reason tended to monitor my behavior, saw us out there, screamed at us, and either we didn't hear her, or more likely we heard her, but continued on anyway. She called my father, who was at the mine at the 1500 level. Dad looked out and he saw two little black specks in the distance. And there we were, going toward the waterfall. He raced down, he said something, there were 245 steps, he never went down there quicker, and called the men who were around him, called up someone in transportation, some man of small stature, he said. And they all went racing out toward where we were. And they were shouting. Dad tried to go out, but of course, and my mom, but the snow would not support them. The adults were simply too heavy, whereas we little kids could scoot out there. The one fella, and I forget his name, of relatively small stature, was able to go out maybe a couple of hundred yards, and everybody was screaming. We apparently heard him, and we turned before we got to where the waterfall was and came back. Otherwise, again, I would not be speaking to you now. And speaking of punishment, we had a more traditional punishment. It was a corporal form of punishment. And my very first spanking, I of course don't remember it, but my dad said that, in fact, that did occur. So those are just two stories.
I'm Bill Phillips. And we were living next to Duncan's house when he did this incident. And the really bad part is he never told me he got busted for going up in the avalanche area. So a couple of years after that, I decided to take my father over regular skis. And I always loved to go out skiing by myself, which was probably one of the stupider things to do around here. But I did that. I went up into the same area, and it was in the spring. And it had snowed a little bit, and it really looked like great skiing. And I was going to head right down toward the footbridge. And I was right up there at the falls also. I probably should have fallen in. But anyway, I pointed them downhill, took a couple of turns. My dad said I never ever turned, but I did the usual thing. I got down near the bottom. And then my ski tip went into a hole between the snowballs, which was covered up because of the avalanche coming through with the snow on top. And I went wonko, face plant, head plant, body plant, spread eagle, you name it, and I just lay there. Well, after a few minutes, I finally got up, shook myself off, and with my skis, went back to the house. And Dad came home that night. He says, "Man, you must have had a really great ski run this afternoon, Bill." I said, "Well, how did you know?" "Well, apparently up in the engineering office, someone spotted me and they had a pair of binoculars up there that I'm sure they must have been using usually for hunting, looking for goat and deer in the fall, and they were following me down. So I found out you couldn't get away with anything. So every time I skied after that, I made sure I was hidden in the trees."
Joy?
Okay, I'm Joy. It was Ham. Now it's Malmstrom. And my story is about falling also. We lived in a house in Winston that my dad had built because he was one of the early carpenters here in the village. And he was building a house. And still had lumber around places, but the house was finished enough we could live in it. And it had a little platform on the back where you went out and stood on the second level to use the pulley to pull your clothes out to dry. And Mom was upstairs with me and we were cleaning up some things, and I had a jar with water in it that we had had some flowers in. And I stepped out onto that little platform and went to toss the water. Well, I tossed me right off of the little platform. Really scared my mom, and she looked out and she said there was still lumber in the backyard, and the backyard was uneven, and a board happened to be across two higher ridges that left a bounce in the middle. And I landed on the board, bounced like a trampoline, hopped up, went running around the house and came back upstairs. I probably was 3 or 4 years old at that time. Well, the amazing thing to me was, 50 years later, we came to visit Holden Village. I was sitting in Vesper services, and this lady, whom I didn't know, leaned over and said, "Was it you or your sister that fell out the window?" And I said, "How do you know about me falling out the window?" Because that was a story my mom had told me all my life. And her name was Mrs. Holzhauser. And she said, my dad, being a carpenter, would come to their house in the evenings to help them do some constructing. And she said he came to work one night at their house, and he said, "My little girl just fell out the window." And she said, I never knew which one it was, but I just couldn't believe it. To me, 50 years later, for some stranger to me, saying, "Was it you or your sister that fell out the window?" So I've always remembered that.
I'm Rayma Paulson Weaver, and I didn't fall. I didn't go out in windows usually either. I do have a couple of stories. One of them is back in, it must have been about 55 or 56, I babysat. And I babysat for anybody that needed a babysitter, obviously. One night I was babysitting for, I think it was Herb and Cleo DeVere was their name. Up on the top row, last house on the end, where the empty place was. And I was laying on the davenport reading a book, and I think they had two kids at the time. Well, I know they did, because she was pregnant with a third one. And I was laying there, and I happened to look up from my comic book, and the smoke was about, probably 18 inches from my head. And I couldn't see through, I could not see the rest of the house, and holy moly, something's on fire. And I jumped up, I ran out on the porch, and it was probably about 10:30. And I started yelling for help. The snow was, I imagine, almost porch high. And yelled for help two or three times, and then went back in and got the children. And I was, hard to believe, I was very small at the time. I mean, I was just tiny. And I think the kids weighed almost as much as I did. Hauled the one kid out, took it and set it in the snowbank, went back in and hollered for help two or three more times. I had no idea if anybody was going to hear me. Got the other little girl and hauled her out. And just about then, the neighbor, and I believe the name was Campbell, that was their neighbor. I can't quite remember, and I lost my article about it. Anyhow, they called over and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "There's a fire in the house. There's smoke in the house." They came over, got the kids, took them to their house, got me, took me over there, and I assume they called the fire department from their place. I don't actually know. The fire department came, and what was burning actually was a box of newspapers that they had in their basement by the furnace, or by the furnaces that we used to have. I don't think they had a wood stove. And it was smoldering and sending all this smoke up. Before I left, of course, I stayed there until Cleo and her husband came home. Poor old Cleo came puffing and panting up the road because she was, I imagine, 6-7 months pregnant, and was just terrified. They gave me, that night, they gave me 4 pieces of tin and said they would pay me more later, but she was just too upset then. So they took me later over to Helen Bell's little store that she had in the top of her home, and she bought me a dress, a slip, I don't know, a sweater, I think, and maybe some anklet socks, which at that time was quite a bit of money for clothing. And that was, and then there was an article in the Holden Miner, which I lost. But that was my fire story. Don't recall that we ever had any other fires when I was there. I didn't like babysitting after that, but when I finally did, I went and babysat for Margaret and Bobby Hansen. No, I went and babysat for the Hoggetts, and you remember them, Linda. I finally had gotten the children down to bed, which was a real challenge, and I was standing over the furnace in the living room, and I kept smelling smoke, smoke. Mrs. Hoggett, I don't remember, Oma, and Margaret had gone to the show. I don't know where the guys were. Didn't know if Bobby was home downstairs, but assumed he was. And they lived in the basement of the house. And when I watched for him to come home, I was afraid to go down and knock on the door and wake up Bobby, because I also babysat for him, and he could be a little bit on the not real pleasant side, as I recall. And they came up the stairs, and I said, "I smell smoke in this house," and I thought it was my imagination. Margaret went running in, and Bobby had gone to bed with a cigarette and put it out on the vanity, the velvet top vanity stool, and it was indeed burning. I didn't babysit for a while after that.
Bill, have you got a story for us?
Yes, lots of stories. It seemed to be this theme is snow, so I can tell a few things about snow.
Give your name.
Bill Small, what you did, 1942 to 1948. In the winter, I believe, probably 1946, it was a lot of heavy snow. Well, we lived on the first row, and the snow go would come through on our road regularly rather than the snow plow, because they could blow it over and not hit anything. So we had nice sheer walls of the snow banks along our side. My sister Helen and I had been raised primarily in very, very small environments, so we depended upon one another to play together. So we used to do all kinds of things together, and so one of the things we did was we carved roadways in the side of these snow banks to drive our cars through, our toy cars, and we played that way in the snow banks. And I remember distinctly building little tunnels and things like that. That's one little short story. Another one on that same winter, I believe, besides the famous one of everybody telling me how I was throwing snow on the snow sidewalk. The snow was on the downhill side of our house, was up to our porch, and that was not the roof slope, that was the front slope. Front. It was up to the porch. We had an entryway into our basement. We couldn't get through, so I dug a hole through it. We made tunnels in this big pile of snow out there in the front, and we played like mining in the snow piles. We did a lot of things like that, including skiing off the roof that winter, down the slope and up to the roof of the Sims or Soderbergh's house at that time. And a lot of little snow stories we can tell. So my sister has a snow tour to tell to you too.
I'm Helen Small, Kristen. And as Bill said, we were there from 1942 to 1948. I came there as a first grader. But the story I have, We gained a sister in 1947. She was my 12th birthday present. She was born in Spokane. My mother went to Spokane and spent a month. And in February of 48, when Mary was about 9 months old, my mother was nursing her. My father got very ill, working in the mine, was a diamond driller. He attracted the flu and complications of the flu, and pretty soon he was flat on his back, couldn't move, high temperature. They decided he was not going to survive unless they got him out to a hospital. The snow was very deep. This was February. He was a big man, 6'6" tall. The way our house was built, he couldn't walk. He was so weak. They had him on a stretcher. Couldn't get him out of the house because of the angle of the door and the hallway. So they had to burrow the snow away from the window of the bedroom and cart him out the window and down into a company truck, down to the lake. And the little boat was on the lake bed, as I understand, that day. And the lake was low, and they nearly dumped him in the lake getting him on the boat. But they got him down, and the stories around the camp were that he was never going to survive the trip. And they got him down the lake and to the hospital in Wenatchee. And he was there for over a month in Wenatchee. My mother would go down every weekend. Bill and I were in school, and she was nursing my sister. So she would go out, and after the first couple of weeks, she decided this was a little bit difficult. She weaned Mary in the meantime and left her with Bill and me and went down to visit our father. And after one of these, our neighbors, of course, were looking in on us as we were taking care of this baby. And if she had to come back because we were in school, take care of her during the week. And after one of these jaunts on the weekend, Mother came back and said, "Your father is not going to make it. He's near death's door." And she prepared us for his death. Well, he managed to survive, and somehow our resources ran out, had no health insurance, but he was a veteran of World War I. And so my aunt, or his sister, was able to get him into the Veterans Hospital in Seattle. And when she came over and rode in the ambulance over to Seattle, where they put him in the Marine Hospital, and he actually recovered. He started getting better as soon as he came over the mountains. So he did survive that, but the upshot of that was he got out of the hospital in June, and they said, "Never again grow underground." So at that point, we had to leave. Bill was already graduated from eighth grade, and had spent his first year of high school in correspondence course. I was in had just finished seventh grade, and I really wanted to finish eighth grade. But we had to move, and that's when my folks had to make a trip and find a new job, new place to live, and we sold the house to the LaFrenzes. Bill and my father packed up all our belongings in a rented truck. Every single thing in our house went into that truck. My father was a packer, like you would not believe. Every square inch of that truck was filled, and he managed to get everything in. And at the last thing, he put the tailgate down. Put the tailgate down. He had the couch left over, and he had our bicycles. And he managed to put those on the back side and then fastened our bicycles on the very end of the truck and took off. And my mother and sister and I went down the lake the next day. But he has quite a story about loading the truck onto the barge. You want to tell that part?
That was quite an experience to leave Holden by way of the tugboat. All during the night. They loaded the truck, and that truck was heavy. Imagine it was equal to a concentrate bucket at least. And they loaded it and put it on top of the concentrate buckets on the barge. And probably at midnight or thereabouts, they took off, and I was in the tugboat with my father and the tugboat driver. There was no sleep that night, but you can't believe the noise of the tugboat. And so we got down. That's how I got out of there. I went back a year later for a week, and then I didn't come back for a long time. Ellen also had a story about sled riding. She told me she was going to tell you.
Oh, another snow story. I was about 8 years old, and we had a sled, and I was sledding on the second row down the slope where we go down and then start up again. And I was going pretty good rate, and I was on my stomach steering the sled, and some little kid comes along and sideswipes me and sent me into a rock wall head first, and just really banged up my face. I had a huge swollen lip, and I had a campfire meeting that night, and I had to go to this meeting with this huge swollen lip. I can't remember who the boy was who pushed me off into the rock wall, but I never again went down on my stomach. I always sat up and steered with my feet after that.
Mike, did you have a story to tell?
Oh, just a brief couple ones that I'm reminded of. The snow story is Mike Rogan. Because, yes, for winning Darwin Awards, I could say that I'd almost beat out Duncan. That whole aspect of kids getting on the roofs and helping shovel the snow off by sliding down and going off with the snow and coming back around and doing it again and again must have led me to want to dive off. Well, I dove off with my hands to my side. No, no, because there's no getting out. Then somebody has to pull you out from feet first, head in. But yeah, it just brings back all sorts of things that when they were mentioning about making paths in the snow. You remember when we used to go to the school and the sign of spring, you could take the mud. The snow was down to the point where the mud was wet and we were shooting marbles and rings. But as these come up, we'll add to it.
I'd like to mention one more story that I used during the summer. This is Linda Jensen again. Some of you may remember the spring that we had a very late thaw and an extremely hard crust. And I don't remember if it was 53 or 54. Darn it, Doug just left. The crust was so hard we were playing baseball on top of the snow on the school field because it was baseball time, but it wasn't melted yet. And we actually played for several days before we had the bases worn out enough that we started post-holing. But we did have several days that we were able to play on the snow. So. Jerry, did you have a story for us? Will you tell us about your health experience? I think that would be a good story to hear for sure.
My health experience?
The polio.
Oh, well, there's really not much to tell. I got, in 1953, a couple of us kids got...
Your name?
I'm sorry, Jerry Paulson. It's my sister, Rena. She's the heroine. I got sick, and my mom and dad just thought it was the flu. And there was a couple of us in town that got sick with this flu that just seemed to hang on, and I didn't think much of it. But they took me to the doctor. I can't remember the doctor's name down here. He was a young doctor. And he said, we're going to have to do a spinal tap. And back in 53, this was a pretty scary procedure. This is where they take a syringe about the size of your arm and a needle about that long. And they push it through the vertebrae in your back into your spinal column where the spinal fluid is, and they take a sample of your spinal fluid, and if there's blood in it, that was a sign of polio. And it turned out that I had polio, and you know, I was just a child. I didn't know from that. I was sick. I felt bad. Just felt like I had the flu all the time, but that was the big polio epidemic, I guess. And I had it. Marla Yates had it, and she subsequently passed away. And I understand one other person in town had it, but I don't know who it was. But they flew us out. I flew out with Ernie Gibson and flew right down to the base of, Arondo Street in Wenatchee. And they hustled me right up to Deaconess Hospital. And I was there for about 3 weeks. And my dad was with me the whole time. I got over it. But Marla was in the room next to me, and when she died, and they never told me that. I didn't know it until the next summer, practically. But it was early in the spring when I got back, missed quite a bit of school. I don't remember a lot about having polio, except that it was real scary. And in the bed, I had to stay way down in the bed, keep my feet on this footboard to keep straight up. And when I got out, I had weakness in my left leg. And the biggest problem for me is Jim Sullivan, the scoutmaster, wouldn't take me on long hikes anymore because he's afraid of
me. You have a story, Brenda?
I can talk about that polio epidemic. I was a student nurse back then, and we were on our affiliation over on the coast of...
Would you give your full name?
I'm Brenda Getty Clark. And we were over on our affiliations on the coast. We had several affiliations because we didn't have that many patients of that particular type. In that hospital in Wenatchee, and I came back to a full-blown polio epidemic. We had a whole floor closed with polio. We flew in 7 iron lungs from around the United States. They flew in every nurse they could find from all over the United States. And I came back in the middle of that polio epidemic. There were several of us that came back to that.
I guess the family, according to my sister, was quite isolated. Everybody had to stay away from us, and she went down grocery shopping. She couldn't go in the store. She'd probably speak better this than I could, but I was in the house sick and didn't know a lot about it.
The one nurse that would not come back to work during the polio epidemic got polio. And she was the only one that they could not get to come back to the hospital.
I can add a little bit more to that. When Marla got sick and they took her out, I'm sure she probably would have died anyway, but I understand she sat up in the ambulance. She felt so good. She sat up from Chelan in the ambulance all the way to Wenatchee and chatted with the ambulance driver, and they had no idea how bad she really was. And then she got to the hospital, and within 24 hours, I think, she passed away.
Does anyone else of the children have a story? If not, we are getting close to dinner time. Go ahead, Jerry.
This is real short. When they were talking about snow and having to shovel the snow up, and it's almost like tunnels, I have very few memories, true memories of my own of living in Holden, except my mother's pictures. But I do remember playing some kind of a game with the other little kids that lived around, of capture, and they would catch you, and then they would put you in one of these tunnels. That was your capture place. And I can remember being afraid that they might lay me in the yellow stains from the doggies. Because these tunnels, because of the dogs, they had to hike their leg all along these tunnels. And that's, I mean, isn't that strange that that's what I remember about Holden?
I remember a game called Capture, but it wasn't like that.
Pat, did you?
Tricky.
You moved. Are you going to tell us the story?
Yeah, I've got a couple of, I'll keep it short. My name's Pat Handel Schonder. The things I remember about living and holding as a child is just all of us kids, I think, had a very blessed childhood. We had experiences and everything that you couldn't have on the outside because you were living in the mountains. You were just basically on vacation all the time. And one of my favorite ones that I remember is Susan Talon and I used to run around together. And I don't know if anybody knows this spot, but we used to call it the Pollywog Pond, and it was kind of west of the picnic area. And there was someone built a raft and put the raft out there, and Susan and I were out walking one day. Of course, as kids, were free to walk here and there, whatever. And we noticed there were some pollywogs in there. And so we went home and we asked our parents, do you have any cups to use? And when I told Mom what I wanted to do with it, she says, you're not taking a cup that we drink out of. And I said, but they're just pollywogs. And she says, no. So she reached in the cupboard and she handed me a paper cup. And I says, well, can I have two then? And she said, yeah. And Susan came up to her and she had a couple of paper cups. I don't know how many hours we sat on the raft trying to trap the pollywogs between the two cups to get them. We managed to get, I think, 5 or 6, and since Dad had built a bird bath for me out of an old stump that he'd hollowed out, and he made it like a bird bath or something, he filled it with water, and I put my pollywogs in it. First thing in the morning, Susan and I get up, go running outside and check on our pollywogs, because we was just going to have big frogs hopping around. They were gone.
Yeah.
And I was told, well, let's put it this way. The true story is the cats got it. That wasn't what I was told. And then there was one, and this will be my last one. I went huckleberry picking with the Swihearts, and I don't know if anybody remembers them. There's Ken and Larry and Sherry, and Sherry and I used to run around together. And we went up the creek, and we went across this big log. And I mean, it was like you had to straddle it and just kind of inch your way across. And two of us didn't know how to swim, but I guess being kids, you just don't think about it. We got across the other side, and Mrs. Swihart said, okay, you can eat huckleberry every once in a while, but you've got to go home with a bucket full of huckleberries. So, okay, one huckleberry for the bucket, one huckleberry for us, no, two, three. Eventually, we got one bucket full between, I think it was two or three of us kids. And then Mrs. Swihart came downhill a little bit, and she was picking huckleberries, and she knew what was going on. And she told us kids, she says, okay, turn around and head back towards the log. And so we very obediently we did. And then she got over there, and then after we got across the creek, she says, look up on the hill, and here was a bear watching us picking the huckleberries.
Picking his huckleberry.
Yeah, raising his huckleberry cap.
I like to match her story. One summer we were picking blackcaps under the power lines down below the town here. And we family was out picking, and I was picking on this one rather large bush blackcaps. Picked around to my right. All of a sudden, I came around kind of the corner of the bush, face to face with a bear. Face to face, probably about 10 feet away. Fortunately, the bear decided to go the other way, and I went this way. And then the other nature story to match hers, you know, these things trigger every sort of thing. I collected some caterpillars, and my sister and I used to pull leaves out and put them into the cage of the caterpillars until they developed enough to make their cocoons, and then we kept them until they flowered out to a butterfly up in my room.
I have a real quick story. Happened today. My son has been hearing about Holden for, what is he, 45 years, and he's been wanting to come up here. So he came up for two hours today. He rode the bus up and rode his mountain bike back down, and he brought a friend. Now, these are city kids that have only ever heard about this. Darren Steele had never even heard about it. So he wanted to see Holden, and he came up here for a couple of hours. So I ran him up to the 1500 level, over by Winston, and back downtown, and they left. But on the way up, Darren Steele is just wide-eyed, and his mouth is open. We got up to the garage barn from the footbridge up there, and we were standing there, and he's just awestruck with the place. And we turned around, and there's a black bear sitting over there. He says, "What's that?" And I looked over, and I said, "That's a bear." He says, "A bear!" City kid, right? I mean, he's a kid, 45. And he just couldn't believe it. Had to go and he wanted to take a picture, but he didn't want to get. He walked right up, about as far as from you to me, and a bear just kind of looked at him. And I said, "You don't bother them, they won't bother you." He was just blown away by that. So he turned around to walk up the road to the 1500 level, got about 100 yards up the road. There's a couple of deer off the side of the road, just eating. They just kind of look at you, moving about eating. He was just blown away. This place is truly an amazing place, and it has never stopped being an amazing place.